You're listening to Tech Trend Investments with Elizabeth Powell and Joseph Grassa, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Hi, everyone. Well, unfortunately, I'm not in a hot air balloon this week because it's not April Fool's, unfortunately, but... But I'm still looking at beautiful blue water and palm trees because I think anywhere that I choose to go always has to have beautiful blue water and palm trees. It's just something that I like.
A must.
And I'm not a folk dancer this week either. So I decided not to go down that route and become that is my profession. But, and I have some other stuff, you know, some other interesting things up my sleeve this week to talk about too that is going to be fun. Again, we always like want to say it's not financial advice. Do your own research. When it's April Fool's, it's a joke. But the rest of the time, we're serious. But again, pick and choose your mode. But this is Elizabeth Powell with Tech Trend Investments. Hi, y'all.
And this is Joseph Grassa. Welcome, everybody, to another Tuesday.
Yeah, so I guess keeping in the tradition, it's supposed to be Taco Tuesday, and I gave the spiel a week or two ago what Taco Tuesday was about. So I didn't officially have tacos, but I had a taco salad, so does that count?
I think it counts. It's family, right?
It's Mexican food. It just doesn't have its crispy shell or its soft tortilla, but it has all the other fun things in it. So we like check off that box. So
check. But did it have the nachos in it? Did it have like nacho chips?
No, nacho chips. But it has all the other fun stuff like guacamole and sour cream and salsa. So it has like all the makings of what goes in normally in a taco. So I think that qualifies.
It's called
a quote unquote taco salad. Basically, any food in California, if you add salsa, cheese, guacamole, and sour cream, it constitutes some kind of a taco or Mexican food. I'll classify it that way. As long as it's good salsa though and good guacamole, decent cheese is okay. But yeah, so
taco steak.
Yeah, so yeah, you could do it on a steak. You can do it on a piece of chicken. You can do it. We make everyone hungry on their drive home right now.
Sorry, everyone.
But it's still beautiful weather in California. And I think on the West Coast right now, everybody's experienced some beautiful weather. We know some other things been going on, but we'll talk about those in a little bit. Again, like we always want to say, it's not financial advice. Do your own research. We're just here for statement of facts. More so on historicals and what things happen, and also add some fun and excitement so y'all are not like bored. You know, you don't want to listen to a Bloomberg terminal ticker and then just get bored. We want to add a little bit of excitement into life, and then also some visuals so that if you're hearing about something, you kind of understand it. If you can relate to it, then it's easier to understand. It's easier to teach if you, instead of just saying strategic and analytical and details, we want to kind of give you a visual so you can get an idea of everything. But we're going to have a fun show. We're going to talk about some fun stuff. We're going to give a market update, also give you some fun facts that will help in your decisions, hopefully, that you need to make. Also bring a little bit of the fear out of the market. You don't want to be that person who buys at the top and sells at the bottom. Never be that person. And that's what emotion and psychology does to you. So if you bring a little bit of logic back in and you understand cycles, then hopefully you're a little ahead of the game. And we also always said, I swear, in probably every single episode, we've always said only invest in things that are new to you. Small amounts, your coffee money, like $10. Don't invest large amounts of money when you're learning something. See what it does first, and then make a decision based on information and research and time. So hopefully, we said that every single episode, right?
Yeah, I think literally every episode.
Every episode. If you can paper trade, you can invest $10. If it's like your money that you would normally get your pocket change, and like if you open up your junk drawer and you have change in that drawer, that's your discretionary money. If it's the money that you were going to go buy Starbucks or a drink that day and you decided to make coffee at home, you have an extra $10. That's your money that you can invest in. But every single episode, whenever there's something new in the market, only use the money, your play money, your discretionary money, your coffee money, money that you can, test out the waters with. And then when you see what happens in cycles and you understand things better, the emotion will get taken out of it because you don't have high risk. The emotion gets taken out of it, and then you're able to trade more effectively or invest more effectively. And this goes like for stocks and bonds and options and futures and crypto, and it goes for real estate, or if you're buying a business or anything like that, you always want to test it out first, see how it plays out, plan it ahead, do paper trading on it, do paper on it, invest small amounts, and then increase as you go along. But there's going to be a reason why I'm going through this all over again, and maybe all of the reason why we're saying this again. So like if you've been through a lot of cycles, this is what normally happens, and we'll talk about the reasons why and then what we anticipate and what the cycles are happening and what people that have made enormous amounts of wealth have done in the past. And so maybe if we learn from history, it can help us in the future, right?
It's all about learning from the past cycles and what other people have done and how they've generated an income and wealth. Like Elizabeth said, it's all about just it for them. It was taking their emotion and just putting it to the side for a little bit and just analyzing, figuring out what's happened, what works, what doesn't work, and then using a strategy and sticking to it. That's all it is. And then once you find it out, and we're going to explain a little bit of what's happening. And maybe it'll help you come to a more refined conclusion as to what you think is really happening. Put your emotions to the side for a little bit while we talk about it and just analyze it with us.
Yeah, and it make your own decision too. Never,
Obviously.
never follow one person or 10 people or a group. Like, make your own decision and what works best for you. Everyone has their own risk tolerance. Everyone has their own reward tolerance. Everyone has their own comfort zone and how much they can try with, like how much play money, how much coffee money. So never, ever, ever invest your mortgage payments or your rent payments or your insurance payment or your car payment. Never, never, never invest your primary, sources of your shelter, food, water, clothing. It's always your play money, your coffee money. So, but we have some fun stuff too. So I've also been trying to like add a little lightheartedness to it for these last, couple months or so too. When we first started, oh my goodness, it was like February of last year. I think ETH was somewhere between 16 and 22 then.
I
So,
think it was closer to 16.
it's cycled. It's gone up to an all-time high of 46. It's gone back down to 22. It's gone back up to 44. It's gone down to 15. It's cycles. It's highly volatile. So it's one of, like I said, there's different types of stocks. There's the blue chips, there's mid caps, there's small caps, there's international stocks. And as you go down, they become more volatile, but they also have a higher reward, right? A higher risk, higher reward because they're more volatile. When you go into blue chips, which are more stable, they tend to stay pretty close to their price. They don't move that much up and down, except for days like yesterday and today. But there's also reasons why, right? And then we're going to talk about that too. But when we're going through, like, we want to be a little bit more lighthearted. If we stare at charts all day and we stare at numbers all day, they always say if whenever you watch what is it, a boiled pot, it doesn't boil. Whenever you watch a pot, it doesn't boil.
Oh, it's like watching paint dry. It seems
Right?
endless.
Right. So, I mean, like, take a break, like, go for a walk, take a break, go do something fun, enjoy your time, and then come back to it maybe for an hour and then take a break. But just like staring at things doesn't help. And then we're going to put a little bit more sense and like reason and why behind it, and then you can make an informed decision by doing some more research and then deciding what direction you want to go into. But again, as we talked, most investments, like a buying a house or investing for retirement, are 30-year in process. If people are in the beginning of it and you're starting out something new, you can be more high risk because you're more adverse. Like you're not going to be affected. You do not need the money within the next hour or 2 days or 30 days or year, right? If you have 30 years to invest, you have that long period of time for the markets to go through their cycles and come up. And historically, like if we look at just the stock market alone, I pulled up a chart. Let me see the chart. Like the Dow, let's see where the Dow is. So the Dow on, well,
Oh.
just even do the, right? So that's been 25 years. Okay, the
Okay.
Dow in October 13th of 2000 was at 10,192. Today, the Dow is at 37,645. So hypothetically, if you were investing for retirement 25 years ago and the Dow was at 10 and there was an effect in the market over a time period, the stocks were still going to rise because you have time on your side, right?
Time is of the essence right now. And yeah, time's always on your side. And it's perspective too, right? 30
Right.
years.
So you have like 30 years, right? You have 30 years. So I just want to give like a little fun facts so everybody knows. So we can put this like in perspective. So the market crashes that have been in the last 30 years, they were for all different reasons. And what happens when a market goes down is the market is giving a sentiment that they don't like what's happening in the world, or they don't like sentiment, or they anticipate a cause and effect of something in the future. And if they think that the tariffs are going to stay in place forever, they've built it into the price of the market, but that's usually not how it plays out. So the market is trying to reflect to the world, hey, the market is doing what it thinks is going to happen in the future, not what it's actually priced at today. So hypothetically, if a market crashes, it's what they anticipate is going to happen in the future. And then the market will correct itself if the things that are supposed to happen in the future correct themselves too. And then that's what brings back the rally. So people will do a sell-off when they anticipate high prices are going to mean the cost of goods are going to be more expensive in the future, not today, like at this very minute, in the future. So if prices go up higher, that means businesses are going to incur more expenses, which means consumers are going to incur more expenses, which means there's going to be like a trickle effect based off of that. But they anticipate that is something that's going to happen in the future. So it's priced out today what they think will happen in the future. Now, if there's a correction and the tariffs get lowered and there's a surplus of money that comes into the States instead now, and there's a surplus of money that comes in internationally because tariffs are lowered because they've negotiated. And then the cost of goods go down, but also the deficits go down in the countries based off of whatever they're negotiating because now they negotiated their highest and best offer, their best good for each other. And now it makes the economy strong in the States and it makes the economy strong internationally. Then the markets are going to respond and rally because the outcome of what they anticipated was going to be bad got fixed. And now in the future, the outcome is going to even be better. So at the moment, everything that is happening is based on anticipation. If it stays on this path that we're going on, hypothetically, in the future, this would happen. But if it's changed and modified and compromised and negotiated, and then all the things fall in place instead how they are supposed to fall in place, and then the market feels optimistic about it, there will be a rally in the market instead. So that means we'll have an upswing instead of a downturn in the market.
Yeah, it like you said, it's all about perspective, and it's all about like what's happening now versus what people think is gonna happen. And if people think things aren't going to change and they're going to stay on the course that they are, the market's going to reflect it. But if as soon as that gets fixed or if something happens and it changes directions, the market will reflect that in a heartbeat. Good news is more powerful than the future news, because you can never predict the future, but you can always tell what's going to happen in the current. So if people are making decisions based on the future, and then some big decision comes out, let's say in 10 minutes, I'm not saying there is, if some big decision comes out in 10 minutes, those people who, let's say, are selling, they're going to have a hard time buying back in with all that pressure, because people are going to buy that news. So it's all about what you're really capable of doing and
they're going to buy in good news. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Always good news. Always good news.
Yeah. They'll buy good news. So they usually like sell on the rumor. Right. So we're, yep, right now it's a rumor. So nothing has been put in stone yet. It's just threats.
Exactly. It's just what it is.
Hypotheticals. Like nothing is in writing officially yet. There's no documents that necessarily, maybe there's a couple, but there's not documents across the board. It's all threats of this will happen, but it's not set in stone yet. It hasn't been negotiated. It hasn't been officially put forward. So it's based on what they think is going to happen in the future if those things stay in place and it gets put in writing and it's set in stone, then that will happen. But if they negotiate, so if they negotiate positively and then put something in writing that's positive for all parties involved and brings in cash flow and brings in a robust economy and drops prices because of the negotiating, then the market will rally. So I'm going to give you all like a couple of instances so you can see what has happened in the past, right? So the market crashes in the last 30 years. We went through this. There was an Asian financial crisis. It was dated from July 1997 to 1998. There was the collapse of the Thai baht, over leveraged economies, unsustainable currency pegged in Asia. There was a severe economic downturn across Southeast Asia, global contagion, and IMF bailouts. So when that happened, the interest rates dropped because the stock market dropped. And so they had to lower interest rates to bring back the economy. When they lower interest rates, it's supposed to spur purchasing because now people can buy things at a lower price. And so interest rates had dropped, but also it affected the stock markets, right? Whatever happens internationally affects the stock markets. If something happens in the States, it's going to affect the international stock markets too. So that happened in 1997, right? Now, if we go into a chart, let's see if I can get a chart from 1997 on the Dow, just so y'all know. You can also do this. You can Google Dow Jones Industrial Average, so DJIA. And then put chart, or you can even just do DJIA, and it'll give you a chart. So the stuff that I'm getting you from is stuff that you can readily access and just look at. Now, let's see what happened, what the price was in 1997. I believe it happened in somewhere in around October. October always seems to be the wonderful month when something happens, which is terrible since I'm an October baby. We're October babies.
We are.
So let's see. So 1997, it's hard to pull up a chart when it's going back before. Okay, I'm gonna say just let's look at April 1997. In April 1997, the Dow Jones was at 6703, 6,703. Today, if everyone panicked and everybody sold off and they're like, the stock market's crashing, right? This was 1997. The stock market's crashing. Well, guess what? The stock market today is at 37,645. So back then, it has multiplied over six times, 600% since then. So if everybody panicked back then and said, the stock market's crashing, it's never going to recover, everything is going bad, we're never going to recover, and you were in the beginning and you were just starting to invest and you decided, okay, because of this news, I'm never going to invest in the stock market again. It went up 600% since then. 600%. So it multiplied six times. So if you had $100,000 invested back then and it went up 600%, you would have 600 grand right now without compounding, just like if it basically just multiplied and it didn't compound and didn't do buybacks and didn't add to your portfolio, you just invested and it just multiplied, right? So back then, everybody was like going, oh no, the sky is falling. We had a big stock market crash. This always happens. It gives you a lower entry. You wait for good news to come out and then it rallies. Okay, that's one instance, right? So that was 1997. The next one, the dot-com bubble, was 2000 to 2002. So it was March 2000 to October 2002. There was an overvaluation on, so overvaluation on internet-related stocks. So it was a speculative tech bubble. The Nasdaq fell nearly 78%. 78%, that's a lot. We've only gone
Yeah,
down
that is
about
too
10.
much.
That went down 78%. So 5 trillion in the market was lost. So back then, in 2000, was like 23 years ago, 25 years ago, 5 trillion is a lot of money back then.
That was worth a lot more than it is today. A lot more.
Right. So let's look at Nasdaq prices back in 2000 just to see. Nasdaq 2000. Let's find prices. The chart in 2000 was, and I'm scrolling and scrolling. 2000, the Nasdaq. Let's see. It looks like it was at 3783. The low was 2,332. This was the Nasdaq, right? Okay. The Nasdaq today is at the all-time high was at 20,056. The low was at 15,267. And this is 2025, right?
Yes.
So if we go just even to the all-time high of, so 20,000, back in 2000, it was, the low was 2332. Since then, it's 10x. It's 1,000% higher.
In the Nasdaq, so that's a lot, because
Yeah,
if you're
that's the
thinking
tech stocks primarily.
that's a lot of money that has to be influxed into the market for to make that big of a change. So over 10, was it 10 years
Well, no, it
ish
was
20 years?
2000, so
Okay,
25
so
years.
25 years. 25 years,
Right.
10x, 10x.
10x, so it's
That's
a
your
thousand
100,
percent higher.
that's your $100,000 turning into $1 million in
Right.
25
So
years.
if you're investing and you're holding for long term, you can ride out these cycles. If you need your money tomorrow, you don't invest in high risk. You invest in something that's more stable. If you need your money tomorrow, or if you need to make your mortgage payment, your rent payment, your car payment, your insurance payment, you do not invest that money. You do not touch that money. Everyone's like trying to get rich quick. This is not what we're trying to do. We're trying to like make money over the long term period in the future, investing smart. And then the money that is your play money and your fun money, you do your high risk. So back in the 2000, 2002 bubble, the Nasdaq dropped 78%. Since then, it's 10x. It's gone over 1,000% up. And that's just investing hypothetically. Back then, you had 100 grand. It dropped down to 28 grand. It's back up now to, it would be back up to what, like between 280,000 to $1 million on that 100 grand, depending at what point you invested.
And
So
most people
long
forget
term,
about that
25
money
years.
too. Yeah, in 25 years, you forget about that money, and you come back and you're like,
Well,
oh, wait a minute, I have $1 million sitting here.
right. So that's like, that's the theory of investing in 401ks and IRAs and SEP plans and investing for long-term financial, that over time period, just sticking a little bit of money in every month or every year and compounding it over the years, and you're using the average that it's going to at least grow 8 to 12% average over the next 30 years, that you're going to be ahead of the game. So think about if it grows 8% every year over 12 years, that's like almost doubled. So 8% on $1,000 is $80. And if you compound it, you go 80, 80, 80, 80, plus the interest that it compounds, you're ahead of the game, right? Some years it may have a drop down. Some years it may go back up. Some years it may go triple the amount. Some years it may drop down 10%. But in the long haul, it always is optimistic. For long term, you invest the small amounts of money over long periods of time. And in the end, on dollar cost averaging over the end, you're ahead of the game. But if you get emotional and you get scared and you sell off at the bottom and you buy at the top, you're never ahead of the game. Okay, next one.
Ooh.
This is a fun fact.
This one's the big
Fun
hitter.
facts. So now the global financial crisis was 2008 to 2009. That was like the real estate bubble. So a collapse of Lehman Brothers, subprime mortgage crisis. The S&P fell 57% in 2008 to 2009, right? There was a
Yep.
recession and then massive government interventions. So these are like major things that have happened in the world. Like what's happened in the last couple of days is fixable. They're
It's
just
not major.
threats. They haven't even happened. They haven't even affected the economy yet. They haven't even like transpired yet. They haven't been put in stone. They haven't been written down. They're just hypothetical threats that may happen or may not happen until they negotiate and come up with a compromise and put something in writing. So it's not effectively a worldwide crisis, it's a worldwide threat, but it hasn't taken effect yet, right?
Yeah, it's not the pen hasn't hit the paper yet.
So these things actually had world major events that happened that were significant things that happened in the market. They weren't like a threat or a rumor or a word out in the market of something that hypothetically may or may not happen yet. These were actual market events that changed the course of what was going on in investing. What's happening right now are like emotion and what people anticipate think that will happen. And so they're pricing it into the market based on emotion and what they anticipate will happen in the future, hypothetically. But if it doesn't go that direction, then it'll change. If it goes that direction, it's already priced into the market, right? So
Right.
back in 2008, now let's look at the S&P. The S&P fell 57% back in 2008. Okay, so let's see 2008 pricing for S&P. I think actually I have all this info, but I'm Googling it just to be. I can ChatGPT it, I can Google it, I can open AI it, I can do all the other fun stuff. But 2008. Okay, the S&P, it says overall it dropped 38%, but I probably at that one time period it did about that much. So the low was 752 back then, the high was 1447. The S&P today, the high was 6,144, and we're even down 15% right now. So the S&P is hovering around, I think, 49 right now. I have to look and see what it is. But if we look at 2008 prices, the low was 752, okay? So that's almost a 7x. 700% it's gone up in the last 17 years. That's just taken again $100,000, a one-time lump sum, and just carrying it through all the way. And then it has 7x multiplied. It doesn't include like dollar cost averaging, investing over time periods, and compounding and reinvesting or anything like that. Because if you count those numbers, you actually increase even higher. This is just a straight flat 100 grand goes 7x to $700,000 in 17 years. And that was the S&P off of that 2008 crisis, right?
Yep. I
Okay.
even see it going lower than that too, by the way. I see it hitting at around 683, so it went even lower.
Okay, so I'm just looking at a chart where it said like all-time high, low, where it
Okay.
closed in the year. So I'm not looking at full span. Now, in 2010, there was another one. It was a single day event. There was an algo trading error. It was called the flash crash. The Dow dropped 1,000 points randomly in minutes, then recovered. So it exposed HFT risk. So it was like a flash. It was an algo that was in the trading system. People were watching the tickers. They saw the Dow drop 1,000 points just randomly because it was a ticker error, nothing to do with actual market. People panicked and then it went back to normal.
Oh my God, didn't we have an event like that recently too? But everyone knew what it was happening.
So that
And
was
it
in 2010. So 2010, let's see, look at the prices then, right? 2010. So let's look at May. May 2010. I'm just picking a random date. I don't know what day that happened. What did it say? Was it probably October, of course? What day
It's
did
always in
that?
October. It's always in
What
October.
day? Of course. So that was, oh, that was May 6, 2010. Oh, God. Okay, there we go. May 6, 2010, right? So May 7th, the Dow was at 10,380. Let's see if I can get May 6.
That's
It's
going to
being
be hard.
fickle. Yeah. So it was, what did I just say it was? 10,000. It was 2010, right?
Yep, 2010.
2010. So May 7, 2010, the Dow was at 10,380. Again, today, with the stock market being down on the Dow, today's ending price was 37,645. So from May 2010, when it dropped that 1,000 points, it probably dropped down to 9 grand. So it's at 10,380. Today it's at 37,645. It's actually 3x since then. It's 300% up in 15 years. And that was another one of those ones that went down, right? Okay, now there was a European. We only have a couple more of these to go through. I'm just gonna read them off so you guys all know what's going on. Basically, we're saying if you hold in the long run and you have long-term investing, you're always ahead of the game. If you panic sell and get out of the game, you have to buy at a higher price and you sold at a lower price. But if you hold for long term, at long-term appreciation usually ends up going about an 8 to 12% over annually, and you hold and you go through these cycles. So the other one was European debt crisis. So these were actual events. They weren't just like a random 1 or 2 days in the stock market. So European debt crisis was 2010 to 2012. There was a Chinese stock market crash in 2015 to 2016. There was 30% wiped out from the Chinese markets. COVID was, remember, everybody knows about COVID.
I think that one's still fresh.
2020, so like March 17, 2020 was the official date that the US declared COVID and had the shutdown. The S&P fell 34% in a month, right? We've rebounded since 2020, obviously, as everybody knows. And that was like the most unknown that we didn't know what was going to happen hypothetically in the world. So, like, let's see, let's look at prices in 2020. So,
2020.
March 27th, 2020, that was one of the lowest times. The stock market was at 21,636. Today, it's at 37,645. So, it's 1.5 times higher, 150% higher than it was in 2020. And it's been 5 years.
And then in the
So,
S&P, it
if
dipped
you
down to 2023, and it's almost at 5K, so it's
doubled.
doubled. It's doubled there too since the 2020 crash.
So if everybody panics and says the sky's falling, there's no, the investments are down, I'm going to sell off and never go back in, you lost that opportunity for it to go up and appreciate. It's 1.5 times higher, and then it's double on the S&P. So if you wait it out and you wait out these cycles and good news comes, there's a rally that ends up happening, right? So now I'm going to give you some more little fun facts. The wealthiest people in the world made money and opportunity when the markets were like this today. When there were crashes in the market, the wealthiest people in the world, that's how they made their money. They made their money by opportunities when the stock market pulls back. When crypto drops down, when investing drops down, the housing market goes down, that's when they invest. because they know in the future, based off of numbers and historicals, we're always going to end up going back up. It's just a matter of when, right?
Like, we don't hear that enough.
But if you have time on your side and you know history and you know what happens in the world and you look at charts and you see that it's predictable, it happens, you'll have faith, right? And you're not investing your housing money, you're not investing your mortgage money, you're not investing your car payment, you're investing your extra money, you're investing your money for the future in retirement, you're investing the money for future investing. You're investing your coffee money. Okay, so this is what the most wealthiest men have done, or women, or people have done in the past. And this is how they made their money. So again, like we said, the pandemic crash was 2020. Inflation rate hike was in 2022. That was another sell-off. Crypto winter was in 2022. The regional bank crisis was in 2023. We've appreciated ever since then. The stock market has gone up. Crypto has gone up. All these things have happened, right? So now let's go into what people ended up investing in. Okay, I'm going through all my little things. Okay, so so in the global financial crisis of 2008, Buffett ended up buying in and investing. He bought Goldman Sachs preferred stock, $5 billion investment. He bought Bank of America, General Electric. He also invested in Burlington Northern and Santa Fe, which was later acquired in full by Berkshire. So other things, Howard Marks bought Distressed Debt, and Ray Dalio rebalanced Bridgewater's positions into inflation-hedged assets. Okay, so when there was a crisis going on and everybody's selling off, they're buying anticipated investments that they think have a future in appreciating. Now, when the COVID happened and everybody's selling off, Warren Buffett's play was he sold airline stock. So I guess he saw we're going to wear masks. Nobody's going to be flying or traveling.
He was a good call.
But he accumulated energy and financial stocks in late 2020 and 2021. He invested in Chevron, Occidental Petroleum. So he anticipated, now think about this, when COVID happened, right, it was a false inflation that was created because nobody was working, nobody was paying mortgages, nobody was paying rent. They had forbearances, so there was no payments being done. Right. So they were able to accumulate money. People were claiming unemployment and stacking money.
Getting the government checks.
Right. And nobody was selling their house because why would you sell your house if you didn't have to make a mortgage payment or a rent payment for 2 years? So nobody was selling housing, which ended up shrinking the supply of the housing market. And housing was actually in a recession then, right before. Housing prices were down. But if nobody has to make a mortgage payment or make a rent payment, they have forbearances and they're living in their house for free, basically. You're not going to sell your house and incur a mortgage payment. You're going to stay in there. So that reduces supply. When it reduces supply, it causes inflation. It causes a spike because now you have low supply, high demand because people are now working from home. They want bigger homes. They wanted homes with offices. They wanted to live in locations since they were working remote. So they moved into like beautiful areas because they didn't have to commute into town anymore. They could live anywhere in the world. So that caused an appreciation. But since there was a low supply, so think of it, you don't have to make a mortgage. You don't have to make a rent payment. You're not going to sell your house. The people that are selling their house, probably it's an investment house, so they can sell it because they still have to make their payments. So they're going to sell their property. And but there's only like, instead of there was thousands of houses on the market, now there's five houses on the market. Again, we go back to supply and demand. If you have 1,000 people trying to buy five houses, the price is going to go up. If you have five people trying to buy 1,000 houses, the price is going to go down, supply and demand. So we had a false inflationary cycle right then. And then the goods and services were stuck out in the ports. There were no deliveries, right? Because people weren't delivering goods and services. So it created a low supply again and a high demand, which made the cost go up during Christmas because all the ships were stuck out in port. They weren't delivering the goods and services. So if you had, let's think of an example, a pencil, and everybody wanted the pencil, and all the pencils were stuck out in port, and you couldn't put the pencils in to sell in the store. There was one pencil, and there was 1,000 people that wanted the pencil. The price of the pencil goes up. So it caused a false inflationary cycle. So if you build that into it, that you anticipate we're going to go into an inflationary cycle, then you go into stocks and bonds that would thrive in that kind of environment, right? And then the
Exactly.
housing market went up because there were 1,000 buyers trying to buy five houses versus five buyers trying to buy 1,000 houses. So, again, our little economic lesson. I know y'all are like, okay.
Another thing that I noticed even during COVID is people were looking for new opportunities, right? Like
Right. And creating
they're
new best businesses and new tech
exactly.
because they had time on their hands and opportunity.
Exactly, like
And that's when AI came out too.
drop shipping, AI, everything became like the new norm and started like prospering during COVID because everyone was like at home, sitting in front of their computers or on their phones, and they're like, okay, I'm bored. I'm gonna make a business or I'm gonna make new AI tech. And now look where it got us. Because of that, now the tech prices skyrocketed and drop shipping business skyrocketed. So did Amazon. Because of COVID.
Right. So, of course, everything's like a cause and effect. So, whenever something happens, people adjust and adapt and create and then evolve and build out new things. Like, that's what we've been doing. Like, when the market was robust and hot and on fire, we build tech based off of that. When the market has a pullback and volume goes down, we adjust and we create algos that adjust based on that type of scenario. And then we build tech based off of that too. And that's what we've been doing. We've been doing it in silence, but we have so much tech ready to go that we just haven't talked about it or announced it, but we've adapted to market conditions. And then when market conditions become robust again, it's going to make these types of tech even more valuable.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes, right?
Yes. Right. So, I mean, the moral of the story is no matter what's happening in the market out there, there's always opportunity. There's always cycles. There's always something, it's a cause and effect, right? And if you're running around crying wolf or running around saying the sky is falling, then and you're not investing wisely. If you're investing wisely, you're able to ride out the cycle, right? And I still anticipate, based on the numbers that we have, our key dates, like we're still targeting April 30th and May 5th and 6th. The Fed's supposed to meet again May 5th and 6th, and then they're going to meet again in June 15th. And a couple weeks ago, they were going to lower the rates, hypothetically, June 15th. But if we have this going on right now, they've held emergency closed door meetings, which means the Fed may be cutting rates. Again, do your own research, not financial advice. We don't know officially yet. The Fed's going to be half the one that's going to have to announce it. But hypothetically, they may be cutting rates, which when they cut rates, that spurs people confidence in the market. They end up buying more goods and services. Businesses are able to borrow at a lower cost. They're able to work at a lower cost now because the cost of money is cheaper for them because they're borrowing at a lower cost. And so it increases the valuation of the business and makes the business more profitable. So hypothetically, that may happen too. The best scenario will be that everybody will negotiate favorable tariffs. The states and the other countries will come up with compromises so that they can make their economies robust, that works in favor for everybody, that all the other countries and the states' deficits go down, that we don't have high debt, that interest rates are lowered, and that people have more opportunities in tech and investing in AI and more job opportunities. That's the ultimate outcome that everyone's always shooting for. But in the interim, certain key things have to happen. Certain compromises and negotiations have to happen. Threats end up sometimes bringing emotion to the market, but it also gives buying opportunities. It gives opportunities for the future if you're holding long term to be prosperous. If you take emotion out and don't watch charts all day and look at back tests and historicals and see what the numbers do, overall, we're always ahead of the game, right?
Always, always ahead of the game. And thinking about it, there's already been a bunch of negotiations that have been happening, and we've seen it in the news, and it's all positive. It just takes time. It always takes time, and time is of the essence. 30 years down the line, we're going to look back, laugh at it. But I'm looking,
did you buy at that time?
Did you buy? We were talking
on that show. Or were you in a hot air balloon? No, I'm just kidding.
I'll be in a hot air balloon.
Maybe we'll be in a hot air balloon in 30 years, but no. Maybe that's where we're returning from. But yes.
Who knows?
So go out and touch grass. Go eat some tacos. Go enjoy time with your family and friends. Go stare at the palm trees and the beautiful blue water or the snow, or enjoy the hot weather wherever you are. I think everyone's enjoying nice weather right now, right? Don't you guys have nice weather right now too?
No, not exactly.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay, if you're California, enjoy the nice weather. We have nice weather right now. And then we're coming up on travel season, so get those deals on travel. Find those air flights for under 100. Fly to Hawaii.
Fly to Hawaii right now.
Yeah. But next week, hopefully we have a lot of optimism next week. You know, hopefully we have this rally back in the market and everybody will say, I bought the dip. Use your coffee money. Yeah, use your coffee money and invest. But look back at historicals and data and cycles. And I could have went through a lot more what had happened. But remember, the wealthiest people in the world bought when they saw opportunity. When everybody else was selling off, they were buying. So again, this is not financial advice. Do your own research. Have an amazing week. And then thank you again for listening. Yeah. And we look forward to talking to you again next Tuesday.
Thank you, everybody. See you next Tuesday.
Bye, y'all.
You're listening to Tech Trend Investments with Elizabeth Powell and Joseph Grassa, only on LA Talk Radio.